Aaron Crowder, head of the farm program here in North Dakota. North Dakota talks to South Dakota. They work very well together. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what he does with the Farm Service Agency. And Aaron, how bad is it in South Dakota? Talking to your counterpart there in Western South Dakota, the tragedy that they went through with that winter storm.
Well, good morning, Joel. Late yesterday afternoon, I talked to the state director from South Dakota, and I thought I had, going into that call, a pretty good understanding of what was happening. But after I got off that phone call, I mean, I just was feeling really bad for the livestock guys, sheep guys, all those guys in South Dakota. I mean, the numbers of losses of cattle are devastating, to the point where many of those producers have lost over 50% of their herd.
Yeah.
I mean, these are the genetics that they've built up over years and years, and their father and their grandfather.
That part of the story I don't think is being told enough.
No.
You don't just replace this.
No. You just don't get a pregnant mother cow right now today and put him in a wet feedlot. I mean, as people are saying, well, we'll get some donated heifers out there, some bred heifers and things like that. They are so saturated. The story that really took me yesterday was the amount of dead livestock that are in the river around Belle Fourche that have dammed up the river. And the South Dakota Health Department is saying, stop, we got to figure this out. We got to get some way to get down there and get all this livestock out of the river because it's contaminating the water.
How hamstrung was the Farm Service Agency in South Dakota to deal with these issues during the government shutdown?
Hamstrung, period. Couldn't do a thing. I mean, we were shut down. People just don't understand when the government shuts down, it's basically closing the door, turning off the lights, and not coming back. You cannot do anything. Under the Anti-Deficiency Act, I could get fined $5,000 if I basically went in and answered the phone. I mean, that's the way Congress wrote the legislation. Yeah, people just need to understand that. I wanted to go in. I mean, South Dakota, they wanted to go in. People were getting calls at home, you know, government employees, well, can you help? What can we do? You know, and things like that. We were shut down. It's unfortunate. We wanted to go back. We wanted to work, but that's the where it's at.
We're at a point now, and I do not mean this bad against anyone who received the back pay, because they're not the fault for the shutdown. And they've got bills and home mortgages and car bills and everything else. I get that. That's how life works. But the question is best asked by someone like you who heads up an agency. Would your people have rather worked for that pay, or did they enjoy the time off and then getting paid?
They want to work, plain and simple. You know, just face it, Joel. We're in an upper Great Plains area where the work ethic is strong. People want to work. They want to earn that value of that dollar that they're getting paid on it. They pride themselves on providing services to producers. The best attaboy that an employee can get is from that producer, that farmer, the rancher that comes in and says, thanks, you really helped me out. That's huge. I mean, you can't put money to that. So the thing is, they want to work. They wanted to do the work that was in front of us, that Congress asked us to do. Yesterday, the beat was good. I mean, people got back to work. Reality is, it's going to take us a couple days to get these computer systems back up and running. Because when you think about it, this is all of the United States, just not North Dakota, South Dakota. It's all 50 states. It's Guam. It's Puerto Rico. Get those computer systems that run all these databases, get them all up and running and tested. It's going to take us a few days, but we're going to be ready.
When you come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about what it felt like to hear the president say his top three priorities. And as I heard them, it really was focusing on a long-term budget, working with the budget committees of both the House and the Senate to work towards long-range planning. The other thing was, clearly, immigration was an issue, but he named the Farm Bill. He named the Farm Bill, and you know, you and I go way back. We sat right next to each other in the North Dakota Senate, and the minute he said that, I instantly thought of you. I thought that put a smile on my friend Aaron's face. So stick around. I want to hear what you think about our chances of getting good farm legislation done yet by the end of the year with the type of attitude going on in D.C. Stick around, more coming your way on News and Views. Aaron Crowder is in the studio with us. He is head of USDA's Farm Service Agency in the state of North Dakota. Aaron, I want to talk a little bit about what you think is going to happen to ag producers. Colin Peterson said we cannot wait until next year to get an ag bill done. Do you agree with that?
100%.
Okay, and what happens if they do goof this up too? What and I get to say it like that. You're the one doing the job, so you don't get to say it like that. But what if they mess this up too? What if we don't? We're sitting here leaning towards the end of October now, you know, and they're gone for a week. What happens if they don't get this thing done too?
Well, you know, right now, as of today, you know, what are we, 17th, 18th of October, the current Farm Bill extension has expired. We are operating under no Farm Bill right now today. So something has to get done, either a new Farm Bill or an extension, which nobody wants, because it just extends the policies that were put into place when commodity prices were low and those types of issues. Plus, it does not have the livestock indemnity program funded. It does not have the livestock forage program funded. It does not have the emergency livestock assistance program funded. It does not have the TAP program funded. So there's a lot of things in the Farm Bill that need to get worked out in the new versions so that we can move forward and do some progressive things. You know, today, if you had some ground that you wanted to offer for a CRP program, we cannot take an application. All of that stuff, all of those types of programs ended on September 31st. We cannot do anything like that. The only things that are in the current statute of law are the NAP program for the non-traditional crops for insurance. We can take marketing loans, a CCC. We're just pretty limited. So there's things that just have to be done. So if this does not get a new Farm Bill, come January, it reverts. Today we revert back to the 1949 law that sets parity prices, and all of a sudden you're going to have commodities that are low priced, but the target price is high, and the government's going to pay that in between, and the consumer's going to pay that high price. And the common one is milk. You know, milk's probably going to be in that $7 a gallon price. So, you know, we don't want to
go $7 a gallon?
Doesn't want to go that direction.
Boy, not a bad time to not have kids living in the house anymore for me. $7 a gallon, really?
That's what the parity formula kind of calculates out to.
Aaron, Congressman Peterson has been the most optimistic. He said, I think we got a good Farm Bill done. They went up on the House floor and they blew it up. They separated out the nutrition program from the Farm Bill itself. The other day, to his credit, a man both you and I worked with, then Representative Jack Dalrymple, now Governor Jack Dalrymple, sat right next to me as you are now at the Energy Expo going on in Bismarck. And I said, Governor, do you believe that the nutrition program should be separated from the farm bill? And he said, absolutely not. Those two have been partners in this process for a long time. We need to continue that partnership and support each other. That's a Republican governor telling a Republican Congress, a Republican House, don't do this. Don't do this. You're hurting farmers and you're hurting people who actually eat the food that we produce. How do we get that across to the nation through this process?
Well, people need to understand that this is a very good synergy from the standpoint that it provides a stable supply of good quality food in this country. It's plain and simple that way. This country has never gone hungry. And once we just start to divide those out, those things start to happen. You look at other European countries around the world that have gone hungry. In the United States, we never have. And by having a good farm policy that ties or compares or works together with the food and nutrition out there with the production of agriculture, it makes those things, you know, continuity follows through on it. I mean, it just has to be that way. When we separated, Joel, that's when you start to divide and conquer. And quite honestly, if you look at the population in this country, think about it. Between 1% and 2% are in actual production agriculture. I mean, we need
there aren't many of us left.
Right. We need to have understanding of this policy and this process across the country. Now, whatever Congress has us do at USDA, we will do. But the reality is we need to get beyond this because when you look at just the components of the Farm Bill, when you look at the title that relating to farm production, there's a lot of commonality there. So those issues can get worked out. But when it comes to that food and nutrition, often referred to as SNAP or food stamps, that's where the divide is. I mean, if you're talking $4 billion in the Senate and $40 billion in the House, where's the compromise?
How much of our food that we consume in this country do we import?
There is very little.
Right.
You know,
why is this policy a bad thing?
Right.
I'm sitting right outside Tyler, North Dakota, looking at a testing program for edible soybeans that is science on the cutting edge. People that have a passion for farming, doing this where they're cross-pollinating and trying to find the best varieties they can. And they've got the Chinese coming to their test plot on the drop of a hat to come look at this because it's that important to their food supply. That's where the soybean boys have gotten us to in this country. The world is relying on us, and we're sitting here telling our ag producers, oh, by the way, you don't matter that much. And it drives me nuts, Aaron. It drives me nuts. And then you look at what's happened in Western South Dakota, and these programs have a reason. Hopefully we don't use them.
Right. They're a safety net.
How wet is it back in Regent right now? Because I can tell you how wet it is in Richland County.
Yeah. Since, you know, just for example, you know, like in Western North Dakota, since the end of the small grain harvest, I think it's a total of 6 inches of moisture has accumulated. So ground is saturated, unprecedented things like that. But getting back to, like you say, South Dakota, the livestock programs, you know, we need to do something for those producers from the standpoint of providing them a service. Right now, the livestock indemnity program has expired. But I'll tell you what, now that we're back open, we will work with those producers. If they come into the office and say, I've had a cattle loss, what can I do? You know, first of all, we'll tell them the program is not reauthorized, but you need to keep accurate records. You need to have those rendering receipts. If you want us, FSA, to come out and take the pictures and document this, we'll do what we call measurement service. We'll log that on the forms. You know, we'll do some proactive things because I'm optimistic the farm bill will get passed, and when it does get passed, it will have those livestock provisions in there because the Senate version, the House version have them in, retroactive back to 2012. So, you know, I want to work on the side of farmers to get ranchers to get them in, to get that data collected so that when that does become reality, boom, we can issue those payments, we can get them serviced.
Senator Crowder, let's take a call. Let's get to Jay. Jay, you're on.
Hello there.
With Aaron Crowder.
They've been making this sausage in the Congress on the farm for decades. Where does the money go? The cotton plantations, these other industrial crops. What does it have to do with safe and secure food supply? And out here now, it's the corn gas, more industrial crops. This is just, they have to pay everybody off, of course. I understand that.
Hold on. Aaron, speak to that, because I've got what I'm going to say, but I want to hear what you say. You actually run the program.
You know, when a direct payment comes to a producer, those payments, I mean, are used in the operating expense of that farming operation. Corporate operations, you know, they don't receive the dollars. There are payment limitations and there are payment eligibility requirements in this farm bill that we are currently under. In 2008, when that was written, individuals who received income exceeding $500,000 non-farm or $750,000 farm income were ineligible. We at FSA go through those types of criteria. We have a working arrangement with IRS. They indicate to us X farmer needs to validate eligibility. We do all those eligibility things. So those things are not happening anymore. You know, you have to be eligible to receive payments. You have to be income eligible. I mean, there's a lot of criteria.
Not only that, but the Farm Bill no longer focuses on tobacco and cotton the way they think it does. The Farm Bill has much more of a northern look to it since people like Colin Peterson have had they've been around it. They know that soybeans and corn are players in all of this. Let's get to Kevin. Kevin, you were on News and Views. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, you two are both politicians. You guys know how the game is played. Typically how it works is if a bill is going to be added to a bigger bill. Well, of course, the word is barrel, but what's behind the scenes is it's usually poorly written, poorly funded, poorly thought out, difficult to defend. That's why you typically don't want to handle the bill on its own, but piggyback it on something else, and that way you can hope to slide it through. If the convictions are that strong for that nutrition program, why not legislate it separately? What's the big deal? If it's that important and that powerful, why not take? Why not streamline
the farm
bill?
Okay, Kevin, listen to this and then you respond, okay? Because the people that demagogue the people without in this country, the people that need SNAP, the working mothers who are trying to feed their kids that are making below the poverty level who need SNAP are too easy to demagogue as a bunch of freeloaders and a bunch of people living off government. And so that's why you can't separate it. And then you go into the big cities and you say, look, these people are against the SNAP program, and yet look at these farmers, look at the pickups they're driving, and they can demagogue them as well. And so by forming an ally with people that eat food and people who grow food, you end up hitting the majority of the people you need to, so you can pass it. That's just common sense, Kevin.
Well, I think you both agree. That's what our system, well, it's part of what's going on in Washington right now. They try to put too much into one bill, and all it does is pollute the works.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. I know you got to get going, Aaron. Farm bill get done by the end of the year. You still optimistic?
I'm guarded optimistic. You know, like the last caller, you know, he's got concerns, and I think they're sometimes legitimate. But when you really stop and think about it, this is well funded. These two versions save over $24 billion in 10 years. It's a cost savings. The agreements in there relating to the farm production things are pretty solid. The part that's going to be a sticking stone is the nutrition things. So if they can get those things worked out,
which,
yes.
By the way, there's a savings in there on the nutrition things.
Yes, there is.
I mean, we're trying to save money over what the previous policy was, which is basically enacted now. That's the case, and so here we sit. Nobody wants to talk about it. And it's like shutting down the government and costing 20-some billion with a B dollars and saying, boy, look what we did. It just, I'm sorry. There are winners and losers, and the people who think that way are losers. Aaron, good to talk to you. Thanks for coming on.